Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, Pope Benedict inaugurates the Year of the Priest on the day traditionally dedicated to prayer for the sanctification of the clergy. The outgoing head of the Apostolic Penitentiary, Cardinal Stafford, shares his thoughts on the life and legacy of Saint John Vianney, the patron saint of parish priests. And Pope Benedict prepares to make a pastoral visit to the southern Italian town of San Giovanni Rotondo to pray at the tomb of Padre Pio of Pietralcina. Pope Benedict XVI has inaugurated a Year of the Priest, celebrating Vespers in St. Peter's Basilica on the day traditionally dedicated to prayer for the sanctification of the clergy. The celebration on Friday evening also marked the 150th anniversary of the birth of St. John Vianney, better known as the Curé of Ars, patron saint of parish priests worldwide. My colleague Chris Altieri tells us more about this important event.
Deus in adiutorium meum intende.
Pope Benedict XVI announced the priestly year in connection with the 150th anniversary of the death of St. John Vianney, patron of priests. In his letter announcing the Year for Priests, the Holy Father explains that it is meant to deepen the commitment of all priests to interior renewal for the sake of a more forceful and incisive witness to the gospel in today's world. On Friday in St. Peter's Basilica, during Second Vespers of the Solemnity of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, the Holy Father, Pope Benedict XVI, inaugurated the Year for Priests.
Il sacerdozio è l'amore del cuore di Gesù.
The priesthood is the love of the heart of Jesus. This was an expression often on the lips of the Curé of Ars, as Pope Benedict recalled in his homily. He went on to ask priests to make the year a propitious occasion to grow in intimacy with Jesus, who counts on priests, his ministers, to spread and consolidate his kingdom. The Holy Father also explained the gravity and moment of the priestly vocation in the life of the Church, saying nothing so makes the Church, the body of Christ, to suffer as the sins of her pastors, especially those who become thieves of the sheep, either because they lead them astray with their private doctrines, or because they bind them with the cords of sin and death.
La Chiesa ha bisogno di sacerdoti santi.
The Church, said Pope Benedict, needs holy priests, ministers to help the faithful to experience the merciful love of God. She needs priests who are convinced witnesses. Eucharistic adoration and benediction followed the Vespers opening the Year for Priests, which will conclude on the Feast of the Sacred Heart 2010. I'm Chris Altieri.
St. John, the humble and devout Curé of Ars in southern France and patron saint of parish priests, is also an important model for the man who has been the major penitentiary of the Catholic Church over the past 6 years. Cardinal James Francis Stafford served as Archbishop of Denver in the United States before being appointed by John Paul II as head of the Pontifical Council for the Laity. In October 2003, he was named head of the Apostolic Apostolic Penitentiary, the Vatican office dealing with indulgences and all matters relating to confession or the sacrament of penance and reconciliation. Shortly after the Vatican announced his retirement this month, I spoke to Cardinal Stafford about the high and low points of his work in this challenging post.
The high point certainly was the election of Pope Benedict XVI to the chair of Peter. I was aware that the Holy Father shared my concerns about raising the profile of the God of Mercy in the Church, and especially as that related to God's merciful forgiveness through the Church, especially through the sacrament of penance and reconciliation. So his election was a very important milestone in my own experience as major penitentiary. With regard to the low points, in some ways they're related to what I've just said. The cross, as the Holy Father has continually taught, has an incongruity about it. That is, it represents the victory of God through his Son over the what appears to be the implacable, overwhelming challenge of evil in the world. And yet this victory was accomplished through a wounded man, through the weakness of a wounded man on the cross, and his death upon the cross, Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Many people confronting this, who have a burden of guilt, who live with the reality of the implacability of evil in their own lives, and they have often been the actor, the protagonist of this evil in their own lives, find themselves immobilized before that and have no longer trust in the weakness, the foolishness of God as it's revealed in the woundedness and the death of his Son. I've seen that as major penitentiary in various persons that I've come in contact with, and that reality has led to an understanding of my own need as a disciple to associate myself more closely with the mystery of Christ crucified and with the anxiety that Christ himself showed in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he pleaded with his Father that this chalice might pass him by. It's important not to fall into a kind of secular anxiety, which is a fear that evil cannot be overcome. And many people today, consciously or subconsciously, fall into that terrible trap where they are overwhelmed with the fact of evil, not only in their own lives, but in the lives and the reality that they face in the world. And the challenge is to affirm with the profoundest faith, hope, and love the mystery of God's strength over evil through the foolishness of the cross. And to identify then in solidarity with Christ, the victim on the cross, and his universal solidarity, his Catholic solidarity, his Catholic, with a small c, anxiety, that his embrace upon the cross will encompass all men and women. And that is the challenge that every Christian faces, and especially a Christian who has the responsibility of being the delegate of Peter as the major penitentiary.
You've expressed your concerns in the past, though, that this challenge, this understanding of the mystery of our redemption is less and less central to people's lives today, that the sacrament of penance and reconciliation is considered less central to people's Christian lives. Do you have any suggestions, any thoughts perhaps for your successor about the work of this office and how perhaps it can make this, once again, a more central part of people's lives?
In the Middle Ages, this office was known as the throne of mercy, of God's mercy. There was a profound sensibility in the people of the Middle Ages about their own religious guilt, the guilt that they had in their own lives through violence towards one another, within families, within cities, within guilds, etc., and their need, their existential need for the mercy of God. Many people say that the universe is empty today, that it has been so desacralized that they have no out for the sense of guilt that they feel about their own violence and about the violence of others. One of the challenges that remains and that has not adequately been met by the Church's magisterium, even in the Second Vatican Council, is the crisis facing Christian communities, basically the parish. Is the parish realizing the vision of Christ in Matthew 18, where Jesus speaks of his understanding of the religious community, of the Christian community, as being the mediator of the good news, that is, the mediator of God's mercy and of his forgiveness, that we are willing, really, to reach out in forgiveness and in mercy and in reconciliation with others, and to be bridge builders, to be mediators, to be priestly people. So the challenge that I would ask for my successor is to face the reality of the lack of adequate attention that's been given by church authority to the crisis of parish life, especially the crisis of not mediating what is the deepest element of the good news, and that is to be mediators of God's mercy. At the same time, I think that many of the lay communities within the church have been, as distinct from the church's hierarchy, have recognized this challenge and have themselves, through the grace of the Holy Spirit, have initiated prophetically a renewal of parish communities. And I'm thinking of, especially of the new lay communities like the Neocatechumenate Way, like Communione et Liberatione, Beatitudes, etc.
You have a special interest in the figure of the Curé of Ars, who is being held up as a model for this Year of the Priests. Tell us a bit about why he is such a crucial figure for this celebration.
Well, I can say what his life and ministry has meant for me as a model for priestly life and ministry. His great biographer, the Abbé Truchot, has introduced his ministry in Ars with a theme of his, of what the Vatican Council calls his pastoral charity, that is, the love that he had for his people. And that love was a love that I've just described earlier for the layperson, but with greater emphasis, with greater force for the pastor. The Curé of Ars, when he came to Ars in 1818 as a man of 31, young man of 31, the first thing that was noticed is that by the people of Ars is that their pastor at 4 a.m. Had a light, a lantern in the church, and he was praying there, and he did that for years. So they eventually asked him what he was doing there, because he remained there not only in the early hours of the morning at 4:30, but through dawn. And he said, "I'm praying for the conversion of the parish, of you." And he began attracting others doing the same thing, especially the women of the parish. And they began praying before Christ, the mediator for us all. And it was especially through that modeling of what life is about as a Christian, through prayer, the primacy of prayer, the primacy of God, and modeling that for others, that the key to the conversion of the parish, that is the women of the parish, began to associate themselves more closely with him. I personally am now understanding much more clearly why he felt a Catholic anxiety in the way that I was describing it earlier, that is, a redemptive anxiety that showed his solidarity with Christ on the cross, who was our vicarious expiator, the one who suffered for our sins. He suffered three great attacks of Catholic anxiety as a pastor, and the last one was just a few years before his death in 1859. And he threatened to leave Ars again, the third time, in about 1855, 1856. And he was asked why he wanted to go. And he said, "It is time for me to go and to pray to God for his mercy, for all that as a pastor I should have done and did not do. So it is time now to ask for God's mercy." And that is what I'm perceiving as part of what is before me now. That modeling of the Curé of Ars. Unfortunately, he did not have the chance to leave Ars. He continued 18 hours a day until the very few days before his death, hearing confessions. So my hope is I will be able to do some pastoral work in these years, pastoral in a very wide sense, but at the same time to have some time for prayer, asking God's mercy upon my life and ministry, and the forgiveness that is required for what I have omitted or what I have done that is contrary to his will.
And my thanks there to Cardinal James Francis Stafford, the outgoing Major Penitentiary of the Catholic Church. Pope Benedict XVI is set to make a pastoral visit to the southern Italian town of San Giovanni Rotondo on Sunday to pray at the tomb of Padre Pio and to meet with patients and staff at the House for the Relief of Suffering, founded by the Capuchin friar over 50 years ago. The Pope is due to fly down by helicopter from Rome to the town situated in the Puglia region, not far from Italy's southern Adriatic coast, and visited by millions of pilgrims and devotees each year. After praying at the tomb of the saint, canonized by Pope John Paul II in 2002, Pope Benedict will celebrate an outdoor mass and then visit the huge hospital complex with over 1,000 beds that forms one of southern Italy's most important healthcare centres. Finally, the Pope will meet with local priests, religious and young people before heading back to the Vatican again on Sunday evening. Since Padre Pio's death in 1968, the shrine in San Giovanni Rotondo has become the second most visited place of pilgrimage by Catholics from across the globe. My colleague Tracy McClure now takes a closer look at the life and legacy of this simple Capuchin friar, revered by many as the greatest mystic of modern times.
Millions of Catholics around the world are devoted to him, and thousands can thank him for providing dignified and professional health care when they had nowhere else to turn. Padre Pio of Pietralcina died on September 23, 1968, but his legacy looks likely to endure for decades to come. This humble Capuchin priest, who many will remember for bearing the stigmata, the visible signs of Christ's passion, spent most of his life in the southeastern Italian town of San Giovanni Rotondo. Made a saint by Pope John Paul II in 2002, Padre Pio helped build the Home for Relief from Suffering, a large hospital that treats patients from all over Italy and abroad for a wide variety of illnesses. Well, I sat down with Father Gianluigi Pasquale, a Franciscan Capuchin friar of Padre Pio's own order, and author of the book Secrets of a Soul, Padre Pio's Letters to His Spiritual Directors. Father Pasquale told me that he had never taken much of an interest in Padre Pio until he was asked by his superior to prepare a series of conferences on the Capuchin friar. Father Pasquale was living in Germany at the time, and his task was to prepare German pilgrims who were coming to Italy for the beatification celebrations for Padre Pio. He confided to me that he was really taken aback by his superior's order, but that it soon became a very personal passion as he learned more and more about this simple priest from Pietralcina.
I answered to the superior, Paolo Stervite, "I don't know nothing about Padre Pio, because I never read nothing about him." And he told me, "You have to start." And I asked, "Why?" "Because even though you are not keen on Padre Pio, you are an Italian man, and so you have the facilities and the abilities to read his writings." So I started to read the letters, the famous epistolario, the collection of his letters, and I prepared two sermons in German. And I give these two sermons in Liebfrauen, which is a very famous Catholic church in Frankfurt, from the Capuchins there. It's a sanctuary, a shrine, actually. And there was in the church a Jesuit father. I didn't know that there was a Jesuit father von München, the director of the review Geist und Leben, which means in English life and spirituality. And he recorded my conference in German, and he printed it.
He printed it?
Yes, oh, in this review. Hmm. And with a very big surprise, when I came back here in Rome, I was in Rome also to finish my doctorate at the Gregorian University, I saw the two articles. And these articles were read in Milan from the director of the Paulinist publishers house in Milan, Dr. Elio Guerriero, and he called me, asking me, would you like to write some books about Padre Pio? Because you have discovered the mystic of Padre Pio. That was my first link. And since then, I felt myself to be very, very protected from Padre Pio. Very, very protected. I got in touch with him in a very, very deep way.
You say Padre Pio died in 1968. How old were you then? Were you even born?
I was born just a year before, 1967.
1967. Yes. So you didn't have any way to know him except through these letters.
Exactly, exactly. And through these letters, I discovered two very particular characteristics of Padre Pio, that he has a very deep spirituality, which is named mystic or mystagogic, which means to lead people with the possibilities to be in touch with God. That is the mystic. And I would say that Padre Pio could be in the future a doctor of the Church, but the main point, according to my point of view, which characterized Padre Pio is that it was the first priest in the history of the Church and also in the history of the world who was stigmatized, who has the stigmata. Because the first one, everybody knows, that was St. Francis of Assisi, and Padre Pio as Capuchin is also a Franciscan, but St. Francis of Assisi was not a priest, was a deacon. Afterwards, there was a poor Claire Capuchins, Santa Veronica Giuliani, who had the stigmata in the 17th century, but the first Catholic priest, the first priest in absolute way of thinking, was Padre Pio. That means, according with my theological point of view, that to be priest stigmatized for Padre Pio belongs to be a part of Christ suffering on the Holy Cross, because a priest who has the stigmata is not like to be a normal man like St. Francis, which is also holy, or Santa Veronica Giuliani.
You said that you think that he could become a doctor of the Church. Why do you say that?
Normally, the Catholic Church declares somebody doctor of the Church when they have a very own particular spirituality. And the Padre Pio, according to my theological point of view, has his own spirituality, which is to participate to the suffering, to the sufferings, to the penance with Jesus Christ on the Holy Cross. In fact, he received the stigmata or the wound on the 18 September 1918, just 4 days after the feast of elevation of the Holy Cross, which is on our calendar on 14th of September, and just 1 day before the 17th of September, when St. Francis received his first stigmata. And he was in the choir. After taking Holy Communion, he was alone, just in front of the Holy Cross, and he heard, as he has written his letters, the voice of Jesus Christ saying, would you like to take part to my sufferings for the world, for the human being? And he said yes. And just in order to answer to your question, it happens during the First World War, 1918.
The First World War.
Exactly.
And he also lived through the Second World War. How did he live those two experiences?
In his letter, it is quite easy to find out, and it is quite understandable that he participated with sufferings for the destruction. So many families were destroyed from this Second World War, and he participated with his silence. If we well remember what happened in the history of the Church for Padre Pio, in that years, the Congregation of the Holy Faith asked him to stay in silence, starting from 1939 up to 1946. It is not interesting to realize that is just the time when the Second World War happened. So he, with his obedience to the Catholic Church, he participated, to be in silence, because he was asked not to hear more confession, not to celebrate the Holy Mass in public.
Because there were some doubts about his authenticity, right?
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. With his obedience, deep obedience with the Catholic Church, he has always said, I want to be obedient to the Catholic Church. The newspaper of the Holy See, L'Osservatore Romano, has written a very interesting article about these things, because Pope Benedict XVI has opened the old archive, the Archivio Segreto Vaticano.
The secret archives of the Vatican.
Yes, up to 1939. Mm-hmm. There is also a very good surprise and discovering that the Holy See has always had with Padre Pio a very protected behavior. The Holy See has always protected, as soon as possible, the Padre Pio pastoral service, and the apostolic visitator, who was a Carmelite, went to Padre Pio, and he has written a very interesting relationship. We can read the Osservatore Romano, in which he said Padre Pio is only a humble Franciscan, a true Capuchin, and a holy man. Which is, I think, is very important, because that is the voice and the report of the Holy See, not of our other kind of offices, mm-hmm. You know.
Did you have the opportunity to read any of the letters that Padre Pio wrote, perhaps during those war years?
Yes, the letters that Padre Pio has written in for his epistolarium, which are now collecting four big volumes. And about these letters, he was always saying, especially to families, men and women who has known during the confessions, to accept what could be happen in their life, thinking that God, said Padre Pio, is doctor and medicine in the same time. That is a wonderful expression that I learned from Padre Pio. So the main purpose which we can find out in his letters, the letters of Padre Pio, is just that he was always saying to the families to accept what could happen, and then that our first strength and energy is the prayer. The prayer, as written Padre Pio, could change the world, could change the events, could change really the history. In one letter, he has written that the history is written not from big or important politician, but from the humble people, from the good families, and especially from our prayer.
Father Gianluigi Pasquale is a Franciscan Capuchin friar and author of the book Secrets of a Soul, Padre Pio's letters to his spiritual directors.
Thanks there to Tracy McClure, and that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.